Now, I don't know about you, but I've had a real sense over the past year or so that Ireland is having something of a reckoning when it comes to masculinity. From Netflix dramas reflecting the news headlines, to classrooms reporting a surge in misogynistic behaviour, to teenagers learning more now commonly about sex from porn and influencers than they do from their parents or teachers. And all of this landing on the hardest group, I think, our boys. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan. And as a mother of two sons, now young men or almost young men, this is a conversation I personally have wanted to be having for a while now. Because let's face it, the ground under our boys' feet is shifting fast. That's also true of parents. We're trying to keep up here. Real world guidance is thin and online voices are very loud and becoming louder all the time. Far too many parents are wondering, how do you raise a decent boy in a world that's shouting at him what a real man should be, and that does not align with your own values? So with me today is someone who's seen all of this very close up. Owen Cleary is a secondary school teacher, a member of the Online Health Task Force, and educational expert with the Sexual Exploitation Research and Policy Institute. Owen, thank you for joining us on News Talk Daily today. If you were to describe just how fast and how much the world has changed for our young men and boys in the last 5 to 10 years, where would you even start?
I talk to parents a lot about this. I think the easiest way to outline the answer to that question is if you think about the group of young guys and girls who did their Leaving Cert last year, they were born into a world where the iPhone actually didn't exist yet. And that's how fast. I mean, by the time they were 5 years of age, over 50% of the adolescent population of the globe had a smartphone. Now, just as they're starting to enter into the adult world globally, that's about 80%. And obviously in Ireland, it's a social obligation where every single teenager or almost every single teenager has to have one. And that's how fast childhood has changed. And that's how fast we as educators and parents have been expected to keep up with it. And obviously we haven't done the best.
So there's a lag there. But is it purely down to the technological advances? Is this something, is this a shift in sand that may have occurred without that? Would it have happened anyway? Or are the technologies that our kids have access to now solely to blame?
I would say they're solely to blame. Certainly as a youth worker and as a teacher, when this shift was happening, I thought we were heading in the opposite direction. I thought we were getting to a stage where young men and boys were being supported to really broaden their idea of what it was to be a man and to explore certainly their mental health and their emotional vulnerability. But since the onslaught of social media in their lives and the messaging that comes with that, they haven't had a chance and they are being raised by people who just want to make money out of them, and the people who really care about them and whose job it has been for the rest of history in the world to raise their children, they're being pushed out by tech and by social media in particular.
Why are they not hearing their parents' voices? And indeed, you know, if I think of my father's generation of parent, he wouldn't have changed a nappy. He wouldn't have looked after us on a day off school. You know, he wouldn't have cooked the dinner. He wouldn't have maybe have played with us. But then I look at like my own children's father and his generation. They were very actively engaged with their children, boys and girls. They were changing nappies. They've been doing laundry. You know, so how come our children aren't going along with what they're seeing maybe in their homes and the messaging that they're getting from and the modelling that they're getting from their parents, and they're so influenced by what's in the palm of their hand?
Well, it's just the amount of time that they're spending on social media and online every day. I mean, the average young person spends about 5 to 7 hours a day online. And when it comes to social media alone, over 3/4 of Irish teenagers spend 3 hours or more on social media every day. And a third of them spend 6 hours or more on social media every day. And social media, it just wants to keep them engaged as much as it possibly can. And the massive problem with that is the thing that has been proven to keep young people engaged is the stuff that evokes the biggest emotional response in them. And unfortunately for boys, we know through the work of Debbie Ging in DCU that so much of that content, because they're so desperate to figure out who we want them to be and what kind of man that we want them to be, and what kind of man they need to be successful in the world, so much of that content is misogynistic.
Let's talk about the manosphere. I know certainly from even speaking to friends of mine who are parents of kids my age, you know, we're talking late teenage into young adulthood here. They wouldn't have heard about the manosphere. What is the manosphere for those who don't have a proper understanding?
So I think it's really important that we're really clear about the manosphere, because the word the manosphere is problematic. It sounds like it's this physical space that you have to go to find men who hate women and who promote sexual violence. And it isn't. We know that as soon as the algorithm realizes you're a teen boy, it floods your social media feed with content that's been proven to keep you scrolling. So the manosphere is just the algorithm now, and it is being mainstreamed by every single social media platform on the planet as soon as it realizes you're a teen boy. So that research that I referred to showed that in just after 20 minutes of setting up an account, the algorithm can realize what age and what gender you are. And if it realizes that you're a teen boy, it floods your feed with narratives like the following, and I just have a list of them here. The idea that self-discipline, physical prowess, and suppression of emotion are key to manliness, that the world is trying to feminize all men, that women share responsibility for rape and sexual assault, that men are being hardwired to fight, protect, and survive, and that women are hardwired to reproduce, nurture, and stay at home, and that men are being falsely accused of rape, and that boys raised without fathers are more likely to be rapists, addicts, and criminals. And we'd seen these narratives coming up from our 12 and 13-year-old boys in first year and second year in secondary school, and we suspected we knew where it was coming from. But the research has proven now that as soon as they get online, this is what has been proven, what the internal market research of the social media platforms has shown will keep boys scrolling the most. But the saddest thing about that is it's because boys are so desperate to do what they need to do to be a man. And we are not filling that space for them. And we're allowing people who couldn't care less about them and just want to keep their eyes on the screens to do it instead.
Yeah, you say that our boys are being raised by misogynists online, influencers like Andrew Tate and his ilk. So what can parents do to try and at least negate the impact and the influence of this? I think it's a case of horse stable door and bolted when it comes to access to devices. If you have a 16-year-old, they've had that device, chances are, for, you know, since they were 8 or 9. So it's a bit late now to probably go in and try to take control and take that back or limit their access and their use of. So what else can we and should we be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's really important to say for parents that haven't given their child access to the internet yet, and really important to think about it, is not just access to internet, but the entire online world's access to your child, not to. And I know that's really difficult, and maybe that's another conversation, but yeah, it is very difficult for our teenage boys, who definitely, almost all of whom have already gotten used to this access. It's a really, really difficult conversation to have. And there's two pieces. First of all, what parents can do, and then secondly, what government can do to support parents. So first of all, when it comes to parents, like whatever they're seeing online and whatever's engaging them, it's being fueled by an emotion that they're experiencing. And for boys, that can often be anger. And sometimes that is genuine, justified anger. There's a lot of things to be angry about as a young man growing up in the world at the moment. But for a lot of them, a lot of the time, it's masking other experiences of fear or sadness or disappointment or hurt, which we are still teaching boys is not acceptable to express. And that's a massive, massive. And we're doing that from the second they're born. We're teaching boys that they cannot be vulnerable, that when they experience hurt, they can't share that with us. And that is really, really difficult. Because then when they go and they see online, you know, all of these things that they're being told a man should be, and they identify with it because it is what we've been reinforcing with them naturally and traditionally. And then they go out and behave in ways that we then say is toxic. And that's not fair, because it's not their fault. We have led them and enabled them to be in a situation where that's what they're being trained to be.
What are the impacts of this that you are seeing in your life, in the classroom and in the research that you're conducting?
Yeah. And again, it's really, I know we're just talking about boys today, but it is also impacting our girls just as much. And I'm teaching a program at the moment that we're using to research the impact of all of this stuff on young men and young women. But what we're seeing is boys are becoming more and more isolated, and those ideas of suppression of emotion are becoming more and more ingrained in them. So actually yesterday in class, I asked the girls, what do you do when you get upset? And they said they turn to their friends. And I asked the boys the same question, and they said they go to their room or the gym. Some said they listen to music, but whatever they do, the message is clear that they need to either distract themselves from the feelings that they're experiencing or go somewhere where no one can see the vulnerability. And that's a recipe for absolute disaster. We know isolation in these situations lead to really damaging behavior, not just for the young people, for the young men themselves, but then obviously for the people that they're interacting with as well. And my biggest concern in that regard would be how it's playing into what they think is expected of them when it comes to a sexual interaction. and the levels of sexual violence that are being both experienced and played out by our young men and women as they grow up in the world, because the online world is the place that they're going to learn about what's expected of them.
And indeed, on that point, more than one fifth of Ireland's sexual violence is now routinely committed by under 18s.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was not the case. So before, the majority of adolescents in Ireland had access to a smartphone around the year 2010. The number of minors in Ireland who were convicted of sexually violent crimes was 72. And that has grown exponentially. By 2013, it was over 200. And by 2023, it was 462. And that doesn't include the 3,248 cases that didn't meet the criteria to be sent to the Gardaí Youth Diversion Programme. So that fifth of sexually violent crime being perpetrated by under 18-year-olds, it didn't exist before we gave our young men and young women access to the internet. And it doesn't even account for the majority of cases that are coming before the courts.
That is so shocking. And I think that for many parents, and certainly those in my peer group, they're sticking their head in the sand a bit here, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I think it's so overwhelming and for parents, and I appreciate that, but we've got to start taking ownership of it, because there is a closing window at the moment. And part of the programme we do is to talk to our young men and our young women about what they feel is sexually expected of them in a sexual encounter. And so much of it is sexually violent. And we know when it comes to the porn industry, for example, that they are being targeted from an extremely young age to normalise the reliance on porn in this regard. We know that 1 in 10 9-year-olds have been exposed to porn by the age of 11. It's 1 in 4 by the end of primary school. It's 1 in 2 by the end of secondary school. It's almost everyone.
They're insane numbers.
Yeah. And if you think about, like, it's so difficult. And I get angry talking about this, but that's because I've been trying to get angry as a man instead of being upset. But it is so upsetting to think of a 9-year-old. And sorry, no 9-year-old goes looking for porn. They have no idea what it is. They don't even know what sex is yet. And yet they're being targeted by a porn industry, which, one, is $100 billion a year industry, and two, is an absolutely unregulated industry because we're just too embarrassed to talk about it. So the message our teenagers are getting is absolutely clear. Sex is violent and violence is pleasure. Boys do it because it's pleasurable and girls submit to it. And the window of intervention is closing rapidly, because certainly what I've seen, you used to have to be directly using porn to have these ideas coming up in the classroom. But now, regardless of whether they tell me they're directly using it or not, and a lot are, but even the ones that aren't, they still have the same sexual expectation, because it is just infiltrated teen culture. It has become the norm, and we've got to intervene, because otherwise the next generation of Irish young people, sex is going to just become sexual violence. And that is so upsetting. And the saddest part about it is the whole reason they went to porn in the first place is because they just want to know how to have great sex.
They just wanted to learn.
Exactly. As a country, we need to take ownership of the fact, and we're not great at this. And traditionally, we haven't been great at this, but we are getting better. But we've got to speed up in order to support this generation. We've got to decide that what we want the next generation of Irish people, of all Irish people, is to know how to give themselves the best possible chance of experiencing great sex. And who doesn't want that? But unfortunately, in the absence of that conversation, what they're assuming they're expected to do is to be sexually violent. And they would, and not even knowing that that's what it is, because it's just becoming so normalized for them, because we are not having the conversations that we need to with them.
And girls at the same time are getting the message that they need to submit to this.
Absolutely. And that's absolutely clear. The sexual expectations that the boys have said, they're listed by the girls as well, independently of the boys. When it comes to our senior cycle students, for example, 86% of our senior cycle boys will have consumed porn, and 24% of our girls, but 65% of our senior cycle boys will use it once a week or more. And 17% of our girls use it once a week or more. And the porn industry knows it has our boys, but actually what it is now frighteningly also doing is it is engaging our girls to become the producers of porn through the glamorization and the normalization of processes like OnlyFans. So that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, it is a whole other conversation. You're coming from an educational background. We've discussed parents and what they can and can't, or should and shouldn't do. How are schools managing this?
we're not managing this. Where teachers are so afraid of having this conversation. Sorry, some teachers are doing absolutely stellar work, but they're doing it on their own in isolated settings, and they're doing it off their own bat, and they're doing it in spite of the lack of support that they're getting. Porn literacy, or aspects of porn literacy, are now mandatory aspects of the junior cycle program. But they kind of just name that the porn industry exists. And the problem is, if you're a teacher and you walk into a classroom, you say, lads, this is porn. Sorry, lads and girls, this is porn. Don't do it. It's just not going to have an impact. And the origins of sexual violence, including porn, is now a mandatory part of the senior cycle SPHE program from September 2027. But teachers have got to be trained in how to facilitate these conversations with young people. But at the moment, teachers are so afraid that if they create this space in the classroom, they won't be able to control what comes up, and they won't know how to deal with what's said. And unfortunately for, you know, the generation of teachers that are out there currently, we were never given the vocabulary to be able to talk about this in our own lives. And there is an entire, I would say, two generations of Irish people whose sexual education or sexual development has already been co-opted by the porn industry. Like, the internet didn't actually exist in my life till I was 14. But as soon as it did, porn entered into it. But I didn't have a device in my pocket that the porn industry could engage me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It makes me think of my own sexual education when I was, a schoolgirl in the 80s and 90s. That was delivered by nuns and priests, you know, and it was all about chastity and saving yourself for marriage. That wasn't ideal, but we've literally gone from the frying pan into the fire, it sounds. So we've discussed parents, we've discussed schools and the teaching that needs to be done. But this is really a flashing red topic for our policymakers. And Ireland, obviously, because of the role that we have in governing and in having so many of the tech companies based here and in governing how they behave and what they can and can't do on a European level, our policymakers really just seem to, they really have their head in the sand here. They need to get into gear. What should they be doing?
Yeah, and this is so, so key. And we could do an entire podcast on this alone. But age verification needs to be put in place. And that is an absolute no-brainer. And what's really important for the public to know about this and our politicians is that the technical ability is already available in Ireland to do that. I've used it. It uses a process called zero knowledge proof that verifies your age but does not record any of the rest of your personal details or your online activity. So it does not impede your privacy rights at all. It just tells the internet whether you're an adult or not. The UK have put it in place, and the company monopolizing the entire porn industry, for example, which is ALO, the billing headquarters, because of our corporate tax rate, for which are in Dublin. And they lost 77% of their daily visits overnight when the UK put in place age verification. That's 1.4 million visits a day.
That sounds so simple and so effective.
It is so simple. If you are north of the border, you now have to prove that you're an adult to be able to engage with this particular porn company. It hasn't been rolled out across all of the porn providers, but if you're south of the border in the Republic of Ireland, you can't. Legally, you're right. For years, we've been told that we have to wait for Europe to enact it. But recently, through a request from Spain for clarification on Article 28 of the Digital Services Act, the EU Commission confirmed that member states can implement their own age verification mechanisms. And I actually heard the Tánaiste just yesterday, for the first time, welcome the call by Sinead Gibney in the Dáil for a full debate on the issue. It is legally now possible. It is technically possible. All we need is the political will to protect our children online, to at least give parents and educators the chance to support our young people, particularly our young men, in figuring out who they want to be and what ideas about who they are will serve them best in life, and at least protect them for a while from the influences that are engaging them so effectively online.
And give the rest of us a chance to catch up so that we can maybe get ahead of the curve rather than be so far behind it. Oh, and finally and briefly, you know, a lot of this has been very negative. The conversation would scare the bejesus out of you. But I look at my sons, I look at their friends, you know, they're good lads, you know, they're good kids. Tell me that there is hope.
There is absolute hope. Our boys are absolutely amazing. I work with them every day. They are brilliant. They just, and all they want to do is be who we want them to become. But we are just failing at delivering that message to them in a supportive way at the moment. And we're failing to listen to them. That, I mean, it's so important. And in that vacuum, you know, you asked earlier about what parents can talk to their teens about. It's actually not about talking to your teen. It's about listening to them. Mm-hmm. The more they feel listened to by us about their experience, because they are the experts of their experience. And the more we listen to them and create a space for them to express what it feels like for them to be boys, the more, and girls, the more they'll be able to reflect on the impact that these things are having on them. But they are absolutely brilliant. They just want to know who we want them to become. And unfortunately, we are letting other people tell them that at the moment. But as soon as we can reclaim that, our boys are amazing. And I can't say that enough. They are going through one of the most difficult times in the history of the universe to be a man. And we just need them to support them in figuring out what's going to serve them best.
Yeah, and have some compassion for them too. Owen Cleary, thank you very much for joining me here on my first News Talk Daily. I have to admit, I've learned a lot, and I will be going home and having those conversations with my own boys. This is, of course, one of those conversations that doesn't end when the podcast does. If you're a parent or a teacher or simply someone who cares about the boys and young men in your life, well, then I hope that this has given you something to sit with and indeed to start talking about. And indeed, as Owen says, to listen. News Talk Daily is back tomorrow. I'm Tara Duggan. Mind yourselves and mind each other.